They'd have the 6 tired horses.
Oh, I had forgotten about them.
It was only a swap for a few days.
I was thinking that Lucky Ned Pepper might have been planning to murder the 2 stock thieves. It would have been a treacherous scheme, but then they could not inform against him. What do you think?
No, Ned would not do that.
Why not? He and his desperate band killed a fireman and an express clerk on the Katy Flyer last night.
Ned does not go around killing people if he has no good reason. If he has a good reason, he kills them.
You can think what you want to, said I. I think betrayal was part of his scheme. We reached J.J. McAllister's store about 10 o'clock that morning. The people of the settlement turned out to see the dead bodies, and there were gasps and murmurs over the spectacle of horror, made the worse by way of the winter morning being so sunny and cheerful. It must have been a trading day, for there were several wagons and horses tied up about the store. The railroad tracks ran behind it. There was little more to the place than the store building, and a few smaller frame and log structures of poor description. And yet, if I am not mistaken, this was at that time one of the best towns in the Choctaw Nation. The store is now part of the modern little city of McAllister, Oklahoma, where for a long time coal was king. McAllister is also the international headquarters of the Order of the Rainbow for girls. There was no real doctor there at that time, but there was a young Indian who had some medical training and was competent to set broken bones and dress gunshot wounds. LaBeef sought him out for treatment. I went with Rooster, who searched out an Indian policeman of his acquaintance, a Captain Boots Finch of the Choctaw Light Horse. These police handled Indian crimes only, and where white men were involved, the Light Horse had no authority. We found the captain in a small log house. He was sitting on a box by a stove getting his hair cut. He was a slender man, about of an age with Rooster. He and the Indian barber were ignorant of the stir our arrival had caused. Rooster came up behind the captain and goosed him in the ribs with both hands and said,
"How is the people's health, Boots?"
The captain gave a start and reached for his pistol, and then he saw who it was. He said,
"Well, I declare, Rooster, what brings you to town so early?" "Is this town? I was thinking I was out of town."
Captain Finch laughed at the jibe. He said,
"You must have traveled fast if you're here on that wagon of switch business." "That is the business, right enough."
"It was little Ned Pepper and 5 others. I suppose you know that."
"Yes. How much did they get?"
"Mr. Smallwood says they got $17,000 cash and a packet of registered mail from the safe. He's not got a total on the passenger claims. I'm afraid you're on a cold trail here. When did you last see Ned?"
"I'm told he passed through here 2 days ago, he and Hayes and a Mexican on a round-bellied calico pony. I didn't see them myself. They won't be coming back this way."
Rooster said,
"That Mexican was Grazer Bob."
"Is that the young one?"
"No, it's the old one, the original Bob from Fort Worth."
"I heard he was badly shot in Denison and had given up his reckless ways."
"Bob is hard to kill. He won't stay shot. I'm looking for another man. I think he is with Ned. He is short and has a black mark on his face, and he carries a Henry rifle."
Captain Finch thought about it. He said, "No, the way I got it, there was only the 3 here, Hayes and the Mexican and Ned. We are watching his woman's house. It is a waste of time and none of my business, but I have sent a man out there." Rooster said,
"It is a waste of time, all right. I know about where Ned is."
"Yes, I know too, but it will take 100 marshals to smoke him out of there."
"It won't take that many."
"It wouldn't take that many Choctaws. How many were in that marshal's party in August? 40?
"It was closer to 50, said Rooster. "Joe Schmidt was running that game, or misrunning it. I am running this one."
"I'm surprised the chief marshal would turn you loose on a hunt like this without supervision."
He can't help himself this time.
Captain Finch said, I could take you in there, Rooster, and show you how to bring Ned out.
Could you now? Well, an Indian makes too much noise to suit me. Don't you find it so, Gaspagoo?
That was the barber's name. He laughed and put his hand over his mouth. Gaspagoo is also the name of a fish that makes fair eating. I said to the captain, Perhaps you are wondering who I am.
Yes, I was wondering that, said he. I thought you were a walking hat.
My name is Matty Ross, said I. The man with the black mark goes by the name of Tom Cheney. He shot my father to death in Fort Smith and robbed him. Cheney was drunk, and my father was not armed at the time.
That is a shame, said the captain.
When we find him, we are going to club him with sticks and put him under arrest and take him back to Fort Smith, said I.
I wish you luck. We don't want him down here.
Rooster said,
Boots, I need a little help. I have got Hayes and some youngster out there, along with Emmett Quincy and Moon Garrett. I am after being in a hurry, and I wanted to see if you would not bury them boys for me.
They are dead?
All dead, said Rooster. What is it the judge says? Their depredations is now come to a fitting end.
Captain Finch pulled the barber's cloth from his neck. He and the barber went with us back to where the horses were tied. Rooster told them about our scrap at the dugout. The captain grasped each dead man by the hair of the head, and when he recognized a face, he grunted and spoke the name. The man Hayes had no hair to speak of, and Captain Finch lifted his head by the ears. We learned that the boy was called Billy. His father ran a steam sawmill on the South Canadian River, the captain told us, and there was a large family at home. Billy was one of the eldest children, and he had helped his father cut timber. The boy was not known to have been in any devilment before this. As for the other three, the captain did not know if they had any people who would want to claim the bodies. Rooster said,
All right. You hold Billy for the family and bury these others. I will post their names in Fort Smith, and if anybody wants them, they can come dig them up.
Then he went along behind the horses, slapping their rumps. He said,
These four horses was taken from Mr. Burlingame. These three right here belong to Hayes and Quincy and Moon. You get what you can for them, Boots, and sell the saddles and guns and coats. And I will split it with you. Is that fair enough?
I said, You told Moon you would send his brother the money owing to him from his traps.
Rooster said, I forgot where he said to send it.
I said, It is the district superintendent of the Methodist Church in Austin, Texas. His brother is a preacher named George Garrett.
Was it Austin or Dallas?
Austin.
Let's get it straight.
It was Austin.
All right, then. Write it down for the captain. Send this man $10, Boots, and tell him his brother got cut and is buried here.
Captain Finch said, Are you going out by way of Mr. Burlingame's?
I don't have the time, said Rooster. I'd like for you to send word out, if you will, just so Mr. Burlingame knows it was Deputy Marshal Rooster Cogburn that recovered them horses.
Do you want this girl with the hat to write it down?
I believe you can remember it if you try.
Captain Finch called out to some Indian youths who were standing nearby looking at us. I gathered he was telling them in the Choctaw tongue to see to the horses and the burial of the bodies. He had to speak to them a second time, and very sharply, before they would approach the bodies. The railroad agent was an older man named Smallwood. He praised us for our pluck, and he was very much pleased to see the sacks of cash and valuables we had recovered. You may think Rooster was hard in appropriating the traps of the dead men, but I will tell you that he did not touch 1 cent of the money that was stolen at gunpoint from the passengers of the Katy Flyer. Smallwood looked over the booty and said it would certainly help to cover the loss, though it was his experience that some of the victims would make exaggerated claims. He had known the martyred clerk personally, and he said the man had been a loyal employee of the MK&T for some years. In his youth, the clerk had been a well-known foot racer in Kansas. He showed his spunk right to the end. Smallwood did not know the fireman personally. In both cases, said he, the MK&T would try to do something for the bereaved families, though times were hard and revenue down. They say Jay Gould had no heart. Smallwood also assured Rooster that the railroad would do right by him, providing he clean up Lucky Ned Pepper's robber band and recover the stolen express funds. I advised Rooster to get a written statement from Smallwood to that effect, along with an itemized, timed, and dated receipt for the 2 sacks of booty. Smallwood was wary about committing his company too far, but we got a receipt out of him and a statement saying that Rooster had produced on that day the lifeless bodies of 2 men whom he alleges took part in said robbery. I think Smallwood was a gentleman, but gentlemen are only human, and their memories can sometimes fail them. Business is business. Mr. McAllister, who kept the store, was a good Arkansas man. He, too, commended us for our actions, and he gave us towels and pans of hot water and some sweet-smelling olive soap. His wife served us a good country dinner with fresh buttermilk. LeBeef joined us for the hearty meal. The medical-trained Indian had been able to remove all the big splinters and lead fragments, and he had bound the arm tightly. Naturally, the limb remained stiff and sore, yet the Texan enjoyed a limited use of it. When we had eaten our fill, Mr. McAllister's wife asked me if I did not wish to lie down on her bed for a nap. I was sorely tempted, but I saw through the scheme. I had noticed Rooster talking to her on the sly at the table. I concluded he was trying to get shed of me once again. "Thank you, ma'am. I am not tired," said I. It was the biggest story I have ever told. We did not leave right away because Rooster found that his horse Beau had dropped a front shoe. We went to a little shed kept by a blacksmith. While waiting there, LeBeef repaired the broken stock of his Sharps rifle by wrapping copper wire around it. Rooster hurried the smith along with the shoeing, as he was not disposed to linger in the settlement. He wished to stay ahead of the posse of marshals that he knew was even then scouring the brush for Lucky Ned Pepper and his band. He said to me,
"Sis, the time has come when I must move fast. It's a hard day's ride to where I'm going. You'll wait here, and Mrs. McAllister will see to your comfort. I'll be back tomorrow or the next day with our man."
"No, I am going along," said I. LeBeef said, "She has come this far."
Rooster said, "It is far enough."
I said, "Do you think I am ready to quit when we are so close?" LeBeef said, "There is something in what she says, Cogburn. I think she has done fine myself. She has won her spurs, so to speak. That is just my personal opinion." Rooster held up his hand and said,
"All right, let it go. I've said my piece. We won't have a lot of talk about winning spurs."
We departed the place around noon, traveling east and slightly south. Rooster called the turn when he said hard riding. That big, long-legged Beau just walked away from the 2 ponies, but the weight began to tell on him after a few miles, and little Blackie and the shaggy pony closed the distance on him ere long. We rode like the very Dickens for about 40 minutes, and then stopped and dismounted and walked for a spell, giving the horses a rest. It was while we were walking that a rider came up hallooing and overtook us. We were out on a prairie, and we saw him coming for some little distance. It was Captain Finch, and he brought exciting news. He told us that shortly after we had left McAllister's, he received word that Otis Wharton had broken from the basement jail in Fort Smith. The escape had taken place early that morning. Here is what happened. Not long after breakfast, two trusty prisoners brought in a barrel of clean sawdust for use in the spittoons of that foul dungeon. It was fairly dark down there, and in a moment when the guards were not looking, the trustees concealed Wharton and another doomed murderer inside the barrel. Both men were of slight stature and inconsiderable weight. The trustees then carried the two outside and away to freedom. A bold daylight escape in a fat barrel. Some clever stunt. The trustees ran off along with the convicted killers, and very likely drew good wages for their audacity. On hearing the news, Rooster did not appear angry or in any way perturbed, but only amused. You may wonder why. He had his reasons, and among them were these: that Wharton now stood no chance of winning a commutation from President R.B. Hayes, and also that the escape would cause Lawyer Gowdy a certain amount of chagrin in Washington City and would no doubt result in a big expense loss for him, as clients who resolve their own problems are apt to be slow in paying due bills from a lawyer. Captain Finch said, "I thought you had better know about this." Rooster said,
"I appreciate it, Boots. I appreciate you riding out here."
"Wharton will be looking for you."
"If he's not careful, he'll find me."
Captain Finch looked LaBeef over, then said to Rooster, "Is this the man who shot Ned's horse from under him?"
Rooster said,
"Yes, this is the famous horse killer from El Paso, Texas. His idea is to put everybody on foot. He says it will limit their mischief."
LaBeef's fair-complected face became congested with angry blood. He said,
"There was very little light, and I was firing offhand. I did not have the time to find a rest."
Captain Finch said,
"There is no need to apologize for that shot. A good many more people have missed Ned than have hit him."
"I was not apologizing," said LaBeef. "I was only explaining the circumstances."
"Rooster, he has missed Ned a few times himself, horse and all," said the captain. "I reckon he is on his way now to missing him again."
Rooster was holding a bottle with a little whiskey in it. He said,
"You keep on thinking that."
He drained off the whiskey in about three swallows and tapped the cork back in and tossed the bottle up in the air. He pulled his revolver and fired at it twice and missed. The bottle fell and rolled, and Rooster shot at it two or three more times and broke it on the ground. He got out his sack of cartridges and reloaded the pistol. He said,
"The Chinaman is running them cheap shells in on me again."
LaBeef said,
"I thought maybe the sun was in your eyes. That is to say, your eye."
Rooster swung the cylinder back in his revolver and said,
"Eyes, is it? I'll show you eyes."
He jerked the sack of corn dodgers free from his saddle baggage. He got one of the dodgers out and flung it in the air and fired at it and missed. Then he flung another one up and he hit it. The corn dodger exploded. He was pleased with himself, and he got a fresh bottle of whiskey from his baggage and treated himself to a drink. LaBeef pulled one of his revolvers and got two dodgers out of the sack and tossed them both up. He fired very rapidly, but he only hit one. Captain Finch tried it with two and missed both of them. Then he tried with one and made a successful shot. Rooster shot at two and hit one. They drank whiskey and used up about 60 corn dodgers like that. None of them ever hit two at one throw with a revolver, but Captain Finch finally did it with his Winchester repeating rifle, with somebody else throwing. It was entertaining for a while, but there was nothing educational about it. I grew more and more impatient with them. I said, "Come on, I have had my bait of this. I am ready to go. Shooting cornbread out here on this prairie is not taking us anywhere." By then, Rooster was using his rifle and the captain was throwing for him.
"Chunk high, not so far out this time," said he.
At length, Captain Finch took his leave and went back the way he came. We continued our journey eastward, with the winding Stair Mountains as our destination. We lost a good half hour with that shooting foolishness, but, worse than that, it started Rooster to drinking. He drank even as he rode, which looked difficult. I cannot say it slowed him down any, but it did make him silly. Why do people wish to be silly?